From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Looking around the garden as some of spring's show-off shrubs and perennials fade, I realize how glad I am that I made room for some garden-sized trees, too. Not too big and not too small, and the best of them offering more than a single season of interest. Choice trees for the garden, and also some unexpected ways to use them, is our topic today. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Here today to talk garden-sized trees and where at your place to make room for some to the best possible effect is Bruce Crawford, who from 2005 to 2020 was the director of Rutgers Gardens, the botanical garden for Rutgers University. He's currently the state program leader for home and public horticulture with the New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station and a longtime instructor in the landscape architecture program at Rutgers. Hi, Bruce. I'm so glad we're going to talk about this today. I've been going out and looking at all the trees in my yard.
Hi, Margaret. Yes, no, there's trees are one of those, I think, often underappreciated plants in the landscape.
Yes. And again, like I said in the introduction, you know, suddenly there's a lot of like frowsy looking stuff, you know, that's going by at the perennial layer and, you know, the lilac blooms are gone and whatever. And I'm looking to the trees and I'm thinking, ooh, this is going to be nice. And some of them came earlier and already came and went, but the blooms and so forth. But anyway, maybe we just start with a little like, when I say garden-sized trees or we say small trees, we don't mean like, you know, bonsai.
True.
So, what do we mean?
Yeah, no, I once worked for a gentleman who was always talking about a small tree, and he'd say dogwood. Everything was dogwood. And so finally I asked him, what, do you want really want all dogwoods all over the place? And then his wife chimed in and she said, no, that's the only tree that he really knows. So, you know, he's just looking for a tree that gets up to around 20 feet tall. Right. To maybe 30 feet and flowers. And so that's what he was looking for.
Right.
So it's interesting how, you know, there's so many trees, but again, many of them don't get out for the public to see or to know that they exist.
Right. So maybe we'll start with some that are happening now or now-ish. Cause as I said, a bunch have already flowered and we can double back to those. But in my yard, and I'm north of you in the Hudson Valley of New York State, the native fringe tree, Cyanthus, and the Coosa dogwoods are going on right now. So maybe we can start with some of those. Are those on your list of small trees that you recommend?
Yes, they are. So and the fringe tree is a great understory plant. Understory meaning that it will grow underneath an oak tree or a tall story of trees, shade trees. And it offers... It's dioecious, which means there are male and female plants. And the males tend to have slightly showier flowers because the anthers add to the body of the white flower. But they look like, literally like, oh, how can you explain it? They're draping down and they sort of look like a white beard. Each one. And then, but the female plants are great too, because in the fall, they come on with these dark purple fruits. And the birds absolutely love them. So if you're interested in wildlife, and as I am, in trying to learn more about the birds, you know, just planting seedling fringe trees in the garden, the Cyanthus is just a great way to attract wildlife.
A friend of mine who's a nurseryman said, when I was interested in one, he said years ago, he said, well, Margaret, come look at them in the fall in the fields where he grew them. He said, come look at them in the fall and pick the female that has the nicest fruit, because they weren't all the same.
Yes.
Apparently they can vary and some can be bigger and more profuse and so forth. Those beautiful bluish purple, like you said, those dark fruits, really gorgeous. But yeah, and it's sweet smelling, the fringe tree flowers.
Yes.
Aren't they?
Yes. Very nicely scented. And it has a nice rounded shape to it,
yes.
Which again, just looks really attractive in the garden.
Yes.
It doesn't take up a lot of room. If you have a harsher, you know, there's also a Chinese fringe tree, which has a slightly thicker leaf to it. And at Rutgers Gardens, it was planted next to one of the on-ramps to Route 1 and got tons of road salt on it in the wintertime. And it never flinched. It just kept right on going. It looked great. And it's, we don't really know how old that one was or is because it was never accessioned, but I'm guessing it's probably 40, 45 years old, and it's doing great. So again, if you're near a road and you wanted to put a tree that gets up to about 25 feet tall with, again, spectacular white flowers, Chinese fringe tree is a great plant as well.
So that's Chionanthus retusus, is that right?
Yes, it is, Margaret. Yeah.
Yeah, and the native, not literally native to the Northeast, but I think a little further south, although I think it's migrating up the coast or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
The native one, Virginicus. Yeah.
Yep. So, and if you're looking for a spectacular one to see, there's a beautiful one down at the Morris Arboretum outside of Philadelphia.
Oh.
And they have some spectacular big ones of the, our native one. So, Virginicus. So, anyway, worth a trip to go.
So, Rutgers, where you've spent much of your career so far, they've done a lot of work with kusas, haven't they? The Korean dogwoods?
Yeah, Elwin Orton, Dr. Orton, started crossing our native flowering dogwood, Cornus florida, with the Chinese dogwood way back, late 60s. And he was trying to get a pink bracted or a pink flowered or a red flowered, even better, Chinese or Kusa dogwood. And he tried and tried and tried, and he came up with a number of really good selections called the Stellar Series, but he never got that red Kusa dogwood. And so Tom Molnar, Dr. Molnar, who took over for Dr. Orton, he literally just put all of Dr. Orton's plants together and let Mother Nature do it. He just let them be open pollinated. And then he collected the seeds from them, lined them out. And after he did this twice, which is about 4,000 seedlings, believe it or not, he came up with, found Scarlet Fire. And Scarlet Fire is just got deep, deep red flowers to it. And it grows beautifully. It's got a nice straight stem. And again, that's one of the things that they look for is not only does it have attractive flowers, and Kusa dogwood also has attractive fruit in the fall, nice large red fruit. But it's got to grow well, or otherwise the nursery folks are going to look at it and go, no, we're not growing that. That's just is not appealing to the homeowner when it's small. So so Scarlet Fire is a winner. It's just a great, great Kusa dogwood.
Oh, good. Okay. That's one I didn't know about. And the Kusas, I think, don't they have nice bark as well? And
yes.
Fall
yes.
color?
They come off in patches. And because as the tree expands, some trees get more of a ridge and furrowed as the bark sort of splits and grows with the diameter of the trunk. And some of them, just the outer bark just sort of pops off to really reveal an inner bark. And there's one which was the pollen source that Elwin used, Dr. Orton at Rutgers Gardens. I've nicknamed it Patches. It's it's just a great tree. It doesn't have a name. It's a species. It's just a seedling grown plant, but it's got the most gorgeous bark to it. It looks like literally a patchwork. And so I've sort of given it that nickname.
Huh. Now, I think if I go across my yard to the outer perimeter, I think before long in one direction, I think the sourwood or oxydendron should be blooming. And I think then a little later than that will come some stewardia blooms. So maybe those are two. I think those are on your list too.
Oh, yes. Yes. Stewardia is one of those interesting plants that when I was starting out, I had my own business for a number of years and I kept putting it in a drier location. And it wasn't until later I realized that stewardias actually benefit from a moisture location or a lot of organic matter in the soil to hold in the moisture. And but there's a number of species of stewardia, almost all of which have really nice white flowers in the summertime. And then really interesting sort of camouflage-like bark in the winter. Again,
yes.
It comes off in patches. And the Japanese stewardia sort of has some pinkish underbark to it as well, which really adds to its year-long interest. So yes, stewardias are fantastic. Monodelpha is another one, called the tall stewardia, which has orange bark and very, very striking in the landscape, especially with some evergreens behind it for a winter interest. So I've become very, very fond of that one.
I guess I have the pseudo-camellia, stewardia pseudo-camellia is the one that I have. Yeah.
Yeah, the Japanese one. So
yeah, and I'm always glad for that sort of fresh white, those fresh white flowers when it's heating up, you know, sort of the beginning of summer. And it just looks clean and crisp and refreshing.
And you know what's fun about it too? And some people argue this point. I remember I knew one gentleman who didn't like magnolias because he didn't like the petal drop on the ground. But I, when the flowers fall from the stewardias and they sort of layer the lawn or the bed underneath it, they look really pretty thin. So it has both they look great on the tree and then they look great on top of the ground as well. So it's a sort of a different way to appreciate the tree.
Well, that's a very Buddhist, very Eastern perception because, you know, the sort of nothing lasts, carpe diem kind of philosophy, and that we should celebrate not just the peak moments, but the passings of things as well and honor them. So that's very, very, very Eastern of you, Bruce.
Thank you. So, but then you mentioned sorrel tree before, and the one advantage that the sorrel tree has over the stewardia is a really nice fragrance to it. And the flowers actually look like little lilies of the valley on the flower racemes of the tree. And so again, there was an old one, well, it was young when I was at Rutgers in 1980, it was a newly planted tree. And it was only about 3 feet, 4 feet tall. And now it's upwards of about 20. But it's loaded in early July with these beautiful white flowers. And again, it's one of those trees which I'm always surprised that more people don't try or, you know, fit into their landscape because, you know, something blooming, and it really is very, very showy, something blooming in early to mid-July. And then it comes on with this phenomenal fall color, which is just blows your socks off. You know, why people aren't sort of gravitating to that a little bit more, it always surprises me.
So that's Oxydendrum arboreum, I think, the sourwood or sorrel tree, is that right? Yeah,
yes, it is.
And that's an American species, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little more southern typically. You see it growing large in the mountains in North Carolina and so forth, but it's perfectly hardy up here. It's probably its one, you know, drawback, which is why a lot of nursery folk aren't really super fond of it, is it takes a while to figure out if it's going to be a tree or a shrub. And before it really starts to produce a true straight stem. So unless it's, you know, from day one, someone stakes it up and really trains it to begin with. But if you grow it as a seedling and don't stake it, it's one of those plants that scratches its head for quite a while trying to figure out, you know, do I want to be a shrub or should I be a tree? I don't know. So
Right.
Figures out it needs to be a tree. So.
Well, speaking of that, the genus Amelanchier, the shad bushes or shad blows or whatever, service berries, whatever we want to call them, they've already happened. They happen super early in terms of their flowering, but there's confusion in those. I think there is one that's more tree-like, but a lot of them are more shrubby. Is that true?
Yeah. Amelanchier canadensis is more of a shrub. And that was the biggest mistake. I thought it was a big mistake, but the homeowner never worried about it. But when I did a garden over several years, and so I went out and I bought what I thought was the tree form, and it turned out to be a shrub form. So I had two trees and a shrub, and I was trying to do a matched pairing. Obviously, it didn't work out. So you have to be very careful, you know, with your nursery sources. But there's several really good, Lamarckii is one, which is a tree form, which is native to, Northwest New Jersey, which gets upwards of, 35 or so feet in height. And then there's Grandiflora, which is a natural occurring cross. And again, you see that throughout the woods of Northwest New Jersey, and it comes into bloom before the trees have leafed out. And so they're really easy to spy on the side of hillsides and mountains, and really, really pretty plant. The flowers only unfortunately last for about a week, but then they're followed with these blueberry-like fruits. which again are great for birds. And I had a friend of mine who would make blueberry or amelanke, or I should say pie. And a little bit tartar than a blueberry, but still really good. So if you can get out there and compete with the birds, you can make some pies out of it. Which
Well, the cedar waxwings in my area know they have me on their GPS, apparently. And honestly, before they're even ripe, they are here and they are just waiting, you know. They take every fruit from every shad that I have. So it's really funny. It's like clockwork every year. And it has good fall color too, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, they do. A lot of good reds typically.
Yeah.
A little bit of orange. So, yeah, spectacular tree.
Yeah.
Very native.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So any other sort of flowering, you know, noted for their flowering that we want to highlight?
Since we touched on edible, we could look at red buds. And because, again, another native small tree, not terribly long lived, you know, 15 to 25 years or so, maybe a touch longer. But again, they produce these not red, but more pink or lavender flowers in late April, but they're edible. And so they look great on salad. They taste just like peas. So it's the plants in the pea family. And the flowers taste just like peas, and they look great on salads. And so people are always trying to think of something a little bit interesting to add to the table. And so, and also I've never done it, but they say that you can, when the seed pods are small, you can stir fry them and cook them. But I've never tried that.
So. You're taking edible flowers to a new dimension, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So it just, it makes it fun. And then another interesting small tree, which used to be sort of a southeastern native, but it's perfectly hardy here, but now it's extinct, is the Benjamin Franklin tree, and, named after, of course, Benjamin Franklin. And it was found in the wild in the late 1700s. And I think, if memory serves me correct, it was last seen in the wild in the early 1800s, but never seen since. And it's a much later blooming plant. So if you're looking for a camellia-like white flower, quite large, you know, 3 inches or so in diameter, with a boss of yellow anthers right in the middle, really showy. You know, it looks great. It's a small, very small tree, 15 to 20 feet tall, and looks great fitted into a light shaded location. It just needs good drainage. That's the key thing for it.
Oh, I've never grown that. That's when it was kind of the holy grail of when, you know, when I was making the garden and buying trees in the beginning to begin the design here and so forth. It was such a precious thing and so hard to find.
So it's now getting a little bit more fanfare. I've seen several nurseries now starting to line it out and grow it as a bald and burlap tree. And it's doing remarkably well in the field. So, I think that would be one that you might see more frequently in the future.
So I want to make sure we have time for talking about how to use some of them. So, but one tree I want to ask you about before we get on to that is not fruit for the birds, but fruit for people, the pawpaw, another native tree. Yes.
So yeah, pawpaw is an interesting, you see it a lot from Maryland South. It's an understory tree. So again, it likes to grow in the shade typically, but it will grow very well in full sun. We planted them at the gardens, several colonies of them, and they come on with this mango shaped and appearing fruit. And it ripens in early to late September. And it has a mango-like taste to it, a mango-like scent to it, but it has a custard-like consistency. So it's sort of, once you cut it open, it's easier to eat it with a spoon than it is to eat it otherwise. And when I would take the students over, we'd be in the gardens looking at perennials for herbaceous plant class, but I would always drag them over to the pawpaw trees and say, "Hey, have you ever had a pawpaw?" And they're looking at me like, "What's a pawpaw?" And they're quite deer resistant. You know, there's quite a few deer in the gardens, but we never really had it grazed by the deer. So it's an interesting, and there's also a number of selections out which have supposedly better tasting fruit, even though every one that I've tasted is is really quite good. So, and you can make ice cream out of it too, and other cocktails, so on. There's quite a few different things you could do with pawpaw trees.
Huh. So you kind of hinted at, you know, in a couple times you mentioned more than one tree in a grouping and so forth. So do you have some advice for us if we're going to add more trees of these smaller trees, like other ways to use them besides that typical, you know, here's one along the front walk as you get to the front corner of the house kind of thing, mm-hmm. plop, you know, here it is, this one sentinel kind of thing.
So, yeah, so again, I think people usually just see a tree used, and I think in most yards, they think, well, let's just repeat what we see. But again, some of the trees get to be, even though they're considered to be small trees, they get to a nice stature, and they look good worked into three or so off the corner of the house. And a lot of times you want to have a walkway that goes around the corner of the house. And so by placing one on one side of that walkway and two on the other, it softens the corner of the house a little bit better. And then it allows the walk to be even more interesting, because now instead of walking around a tree, you're walking through a grove of the trees. And it really makes the transition of spaces from the front yard to the side or the backyard far more interesting. And then the one I'm thinking that we used was called a Persian ironwood, Parodia, because it has flaking bark in the wintertime. So again, as you walk along, regardless of what time of the year you walk, you had something interesting to look at, because it has beautiful foliage as well.
That has amazing fall color, the Parodia.
Yes. Oof. Yes.
And, yeah.
Another fun thing, which I like to do, is plant them as small alleys. And it doesn't have to be anything grand or pretentious, but, you know, off the, say, the sliding doors going out to the back patio or something like that. You know, if you put in four or six, so it would be three on either side, trees, you know, small trees as a little alley leading your eye back to the back end of the property. It just is it's a fun treat. And it could, you know, whether they're flowering trees or you're just really growing them for their foliage and for that effect. Again, people don't think about using them in that way.
And right.
It gives the and especially if you use a forced or false perspective, where the last tree is set a little bit closer together than the first two trees, that makes the alley seem like it's much longer than it really is. And again, makes your property look all the more large, which again, when you're looking, if you got a half acre or an acre piece of property, it's a great use for small trees.
So in the last minute or two, I wanted to ask you about one that it was in an article I read of yours, Macchia, that I've never grown. I don't even know if I've ever seen it. Macchia, is that correct?
Yeah. Macchia amirens. It's from the northern parts of China. Very, very cold. It's in the pea family. So it's a legume. So it fixes its own nitrogen. So it grows in the worst soils. We've grown it up in Sussex County in a commercial situation. Where it had a little pocket of topsoil that was planted in, but then it grew out into gravel and subsoil all around it, and they're thriving. And so it blooms in the middle of summer. It has white flowers, typically mid-July to early July. Bees love it. So even though it's not native to Northeast, it's again still appreciated by the pollinators. And then the bark is cinnamon colored, and it has these little rivulets that come down that run down the bark. And then in the springtime, when the foliage unfurls, it's silver and it turns green. But again, since it grows in a really cold climate, it has the foliage is initially pubescent or hairy, and it has those hairs on the foliage to, again, accommodate late frost, so it won't get knocked back. But it's beautiful. So it provides interest in several months of the year. So it's a great, great plant. Just, again, underappreciated, not really seen very often.
Well, Bruce Crawford, I want to know more. And what I want to tell everybody is that if they're wondering, trying to visualize the trees you were talking about, we're going to have pictures from photographs that you're going to share with me with the transcript of this show on awaytogarden.com so they can go and look as well, and links for more information and so forth. And also some links to some of your great articles. I've really been enjoying the monthly garden calendar that you do, the article that you do, and post online and lots of other stuff. So thank you so much. I hope we'll talk plants again soon.
No, thank you, Margaret. This has been great. I really appreciate having me on the show, and it's just been fun to talk plants.
Okay.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And thanks to all the rest of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.